Welcome to Ron Paul and Charles Goyette, the weekly podcast. 3 years ago this month, President Obama announced that Syrian President Bashar Assad had to go. Now, if you don't remember the vigorous national debate, if you don't remember a discussion about getting involved in another Mideast war 3 years ago, if you don't remember Congress voting to declare war against Assad, it's because, of course, that never happened. But a clandestine flow of U.S. arms, U.S. money, U.S. training into Syria had been underway for some time by then, and it kept flowing. Flowing to jihadists, al-Qaeda affiliates, and the forerunners of ISIS. And now with the spread of ISIS jihadists, the latest news is that the U.S. is preparing surveillance flights over Syria to help the Assad government target ISIS. In fact, European reports tell us that U.S. is passing intelligence on now about ISIS and its positions to the Syrian army by way or laundered through German intelligence. Some weeks ago, just weeks ago, President Obama was asking for an extra $500 million for Syrian rebels. And now, having helped nurture a jihad in Syria that has made its way into Iraq, we're in the process of switching sides. Dr. Paul, this is about as compact a case history of the absurdity of U.S. interventionism as one could find anywhere.
Well, do you think there's any room for optimism? Why don't we take the argument, well, this is so clear-cut, it's so easy to understand, it points out the foolishness of our policy, why it always backfires, there's always unintended consequences, there's always blowback, so maybe we've won and everybody's going to agree with us. Wouldn't that be neat if the world responded to logic and the members of Congress woke up and the president said, you know, I always wanted to be a peace candidate. I'm not going to pursue this. But, you know, it just bewilders me to think of all the obvious evidence that's going on right now about the foolishness that we are engaged in. Why we don't change our way, but we keep doing it. Matter of fact, those who have pursued this policy, they get more adamant. They say, well, what would happen? What would you expect? They weren't tough enough. We didn't drop enough bombs. We didn't get in there fast enough. We didn't send enough weapons. And they keep doing it. It sort of reminds me of the Fed. You know, if spending a lot of money and printing a lot of money and running up a lot of debt doesn't work and you have a crisis, well, let's just do more of it. And I guess in foreign policy, it's the same thing. But you don't hear any new ideas coming from the neoconservatives. All that does is put their back up to the wall, and they say, well, we must be in there. We must get engaged even more so. It is our responsibility, and look at the results. So in many ways, what we have done, if our enemy is the radical Islamists, and there certainly are some, although I think it is a very, very small percentage of all those who believe in Islam and who are Muslims. I think it's very small. But they usually have to have an incentive, and foreign intervention is the incentive for them to become more violent. So if that is our enemy, why is it that don't recognize that we actually give the incentive? And it's been admitted that the best incentive to join al-Qaeda or ISIS is our presence over there. But then again, what about getting rid of Saddam Hussein? He didn't put up with it. You know, he certainly was no angel, but he didn't put up with radical Islam, and there was no al-Qaeda there. How about even Iran? The Ayatollah doesn't like that. That's a strong disagreement with what he believes in. So he would like to fight ISIS. The governments generally want to fight ISIS, except maybe Saudi Arabia, who's doing a lot of the financing of this. But your opening statement really makes a strong point. At one time, we don't talk much about Syria. Then all of a sudden, we decide we have to get rid of Assad and get rid of him. So we support the radicals. Now, one of the best fighters against ISIS would be Assad. I don't know. It would not surprise me if we become allies of Assad and actually band together to try to do something to ISIS, which I'm afraid will also backfire and have the unintended consequence, but a consequence which shouldn't be a surprise to us, that it won't hurt ISIS. It might even help ISIS and encourage more people to rebel. But it's just too bad that we don't have a logic pill that we could send up to Washington and for them to start responding to a bit of logic.
One of the real ironies of this is that it was earlier this year in the pages of the New York Times that Vladimir Putin, Russian president, suggested to us that our intervention in Syria would increase violence in the region, that it would unleash a wave of terrorism. As a matter of fact, he said what you're going to end up doing there is funding mercenaries. And all of these militants that will be trained by Western countries and Western resources will at some point perhaps return even to their home countries with the experience they acquired in Syria. Well, they've certainly spread beyond Syria now. And with the beheading of the journalist Foley the other day, the meme in talk radio and the talking heads on cable television say, oh, well, all these terrorists are going to come home to their home countries in Great Britain and the United States with the experience that they gathered in their jihad. But it's ironic that it was Vladimir Putin that was actually talking some sense about our interventionism.
Yeah, I think his perceptions may be ahead of some of our leaders. I've often commented, I think so often, we supply weapons and support for both sides. Certainly in the war with, against Iran, we were providing weapons to Saddam Hussein that, you know, came back to haunt us. But the weapons that we sent into Syria to help get rid of Assad ended up being used, you know, against our forces that we have in Iraq and supporting ISIS. So not only do the people get encouragement to go over and become radicalized, we actually provide the weapons that they use. And you'd wonder why they don't just quit. And I guess it goes to show that the military-industrial complex has a lot of power and clout in Washington, because a lot of conservatives who complain about Keynesian economics are military Keynesians. I mean, they would never vote against a weapons system because it might, you know, be partially built in their state or in their district. So that is a powerful incentive. And also another incentive to challenge logic will be these special privileges that some countries get in the Middle East. Certainly Saudi Arabia gets a special treatment. They don't get the scrutiny that they deserve. And of course, bin Laden pointed out that our imbalance in support of the Palestinians over Israel was another incentive to radicalize Islam and to motivate those who sacrificed and committed suicide on 9/11. It's a lot of money's involved, a lot of lobbying and influence. And you pointed out so correctly in your opening statement that, if you didn't hear about this 3 years ago, there's a good reason why you didn't hear about it, because nobody debated it and there was no declaration of war, and on it goes. Public opinion, though, fortunately, last year when, Obama wanted to bomb Syria again, you know, bomb Assad. The people heard about it. Congress objective, and he backed off. But they have been explicit, and Hagel said it this past week. They don't have to have permission from the Congress. And here it is. We're going back to bombing. I'm sure we're involved right now. We have our surveillance planes over there, and the bombs will be dropping. But this time is we're bombing the other side. Before, we wanted to bomb Assad, so now we're going to bomb Assad's enemies, who became our enemies as well. If that isn't a case for non-intervention, minding our own business and coming home, I don't know what ever will wake the people up.
Well, I wonder when the Saudis, who have been partially responsible for bankrolling of ISIS, will wake up too. But I wrote a piece the other day suggesting that they must be in a state of absolute delusion, because watching the tactics of ISIS and the declaration of a caliphate, it's very clear that once they get done securing their territory in Iraq and Syria and so forth, their ultimate objective is going to be Mecca and Medina.
Yes, and it looks like they're on the move, but I think one thing that we can't depend on, of course, we don't support all this surveillance and spying and CIA and every activity around the world. But all that money, up to nearly $100 billion a year we spend on it, and how much of a hint or word did you hear before ISIS became a daily term and they, you know, practically took over a third of Iraq. It just happened and no warning whatsoever. But I'm still thinking that them being so bad that there has to be a reaction to this. I just can't conceive of ISIS next year running Iraq as a country. Matter of fact, I think it's destined not to be one country, and it's destined to be several countries. The big fight, I believe, will be the Kurds against ISIS, because the Kurds want independence, and they're moving in that direction. At the same time, they haven't been very successful, and they haven't used the force, but all of a sudden, ISIS moves in, and they're able to do this. So I am betting that the Kurds are very, very concerned about ISIS taking over. So if everybody left there, all the foreigners left, I think the civil war would be between ISIS and the Kurds in the north. And quite frankly, I think there'd be a chance that there would be a resolution there if just about six other countries would just butt out.
Well, again, it highlights the fallacy of our interventionism to begin with. I mean, who couldn't have suspected that if we had installed a Shia government, the al-Maliki government in Baghdad, that at some point we would provoke a response of some sort among the Sunni population that was oppressed then.
Yes, and that's exactly what happened. But let's say they had been more successful, and they could suppress the Sunnis. What would have done? It would have meant that they would become close allies with the Iranians because they're Shia. And what would our government officials say then? What would John McCain think then? I mean, he's been wanting to go to bomb Iran for a long time, but he would say that we must do it. So it's this whole notion that our intervention is a moral responsibility on our part and we're only going to do good is such a fallacy. And yet there's still a lot of people in Washington that believe in it. But right now, I think it's not the majority. But if you ever notice, and I'm sure you have, that on Sunday morning, if these crises pop up like this, how many non-interventionist libertarian types get interviewed on Sunday morning program? Who speaks for the United States? John McCain and Lindsey Graham. And nobody objects. So that's one of our big problems as well.
It all reminds me of the line at the end of that great movie, The Bridge Over the River Kwai. It's just madness. It's all madness. Thank you, Dr. Paul. Another informative conversation and a podcast. And we want to thank you for listening as well and telling your friends about our weekly podcast. I'm Charles Gwynne.